Hello, I'm Dan Brown.
And I'm Brandi Crawford, are you?
We are your TV BFFs, and this is an interview podcast about the TV shows that people love most. Each episode, we bring on a guest to discuss their top six shows of all time based on what we call the BFF criteria. With so much TV out there, we want to know, what are the best shows you've ever seen? What are your absolute favorite shows? And what are the shows you would watch on a loop forever?
That's right. Each episode, our guests will pick two shows in each of the three BFF categories, those being their best, favorite, and forever shows, while choosing from the three genres of TV, which are comedy, drama, and all things unscripted. However, for this first episode of the TV BFFs podcast, we actually don't have a guest. So instead, we want to tell you a little bit about the show and how the BFF criteria works. Plus, we're going to chat about a whole bunch of shows that just missed out on our own personal criteria.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So many good shows. But first, you might be wondering, who the heck are we and why are we doing this show? So Brandi and I are both TV development executives. We specifically work mostly in unscripted. So we're developing reality shows. But when you think reality, it's not just, you know, the docu-reality like The Housewives and The Jersey Shores. And
like Mormon Love.
Like Mormon. Exactly. Throwback. Love it. Oh my God, do you remember when I went on the road to cast that show and was living in Utah for what was supposed to be 2 weeks and turned into 2 months living in Salt Lake City?
I'll never forget.
Because I will never forget, I'll tell you that much. That was an experience. But yeah, so we develop unscripted shows across all genres for all networks. So anything from docu-reality shows to crime documentary series, to game shows, to everything in between. So that'll definitely play into how we talk about shows and how we talk about the industry. And if we have any fun stories about how things got made or what went into crafting any of these things, we'll definitely provide that info when we can.
Literally live for giving the tea on things.
So Brandi, how did you get your start in TV and kind of, you know, what's your kind of brief TV professional history?
My TV professional history. I have been working in television for 15 years now, if you can believe it. I moved to New York right after graduating college because I decided that I wanted to live in New York and not LA, but I also wanted to work in TV.
Strong choice.
So my first job was at a commercial production company. I worked there for about a year. It was really great. And then I moved over to the production company side, working on a lot of shows. Maybe you remember a little show called Driven on VH1. I worked on the Kanye West episode. It was like a biography, but like for musical artists.
Okay.
And then also a show called Inked. That was on A&E.
I do remember that show. Yeah. I was a big fan of all the tattoo shows when that was like the thing.
Yeah. So I went from there to another production company where I worked on a show called Flip This House for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I actually ended up at the History Channel. And so I was at the History Channel on the development and programming team for like 7 years. And then I was like, it's time for a change. I want to do development at a production company.
Sure. Real quick, what were some of the history highlights? What were some of the fun shows that you were in and around?
So I was at History when History was flying high, right? So like Pawn Stars premiered, Swamp People premiered, Ice Roast Truckers was going hard.
Oh, man.
Axemen. I was also part of the team who brought like started doing scripted stuff at History. So Vikings. A little mini series called The Bible.
Oh, sure.
Yep, that was all.
These are big names. These reality shows, these are like big blue blood names in the reality TV genre.
Yeah, no, it's true. I worked with a lot of really amazing, kind of groundbreaking minds while I was at History. But yeah, I wanted to do more.
Sure.
On the development side. So I went to, I started working at production companies. So I've been working at production companies for like the past 5 years, I guess, but on the development side. So putting together pitches, finding talent, figuring out formats, like basically I have a great job and that all I do all day is like make up TV shows.
It's
like today I made up 3 TV shows.
Yeah, we're honestly pretty spoiled. Like we literally just to create,
yeah.
We get to create TV every day. And for me, that started in college, actually. I went to school for TV, radio, film, Syracuse, go Newhouse.
Sorry, I didn't shout out UGA. Yay, Grady.
But yeah, quickly fell into sketch comedy. There was a student-run network and I worked on still one of the favorite things I've ever done was working with those people in college. And it taught me how to produce, and it taught me how to like be in a writer's room and work with talent. And you had to learn a little bit of everything. So from there, I knew some people who were NBC pages and learned about that program. So that was my first job out of college. I moved to New York and was an NBC page, Real Life Kenneth. And
dream job.
Honestly, it was like we got to work in 30 Rock and give tours every day. And while I was there, I worked on the talent desk at SNL. And then I worked audience for Jimmy Fallon back when he was still late night. From there, a connection of mine got me an interview at The Daily Show. The page program is only 1 year. So after that, went to The Daily Show for a couple years. I worked at Oxygen for 3 months, filling in for somebody, in a temp job. But that's what got me into Unscripted. And then from there, one of the executives I was assisting connected me to a production company that was looking for a development coordinator, and then spent like 5 or 6 years at this production company and kind of worked my way up and learned the ropes. Like you were talking about, learned how to cast and work with talent, learned how to write pitches, and learned what a good pitch sizzle tape is, and how to make those, and then freelanced from there. And then I landed at a little company called Leopard USA where I met Randy.
Perhaps you know a little show that our former company produced called House Hunters International.
Yeah, no big deal.
No big deal. Just like 2,000 episodes or something.
Remember they would literally get orders of like, no joke, like 50 episodes at a time?
I think once it was like 88 or something. It was crazy. My God.
Which doesn't happen. You're lucky if you get 6 episodes for a new show, let alone pickups of 50 at a time. But yeah, and since then, I've landed another production company in Brooklyn that I love, and we make a lot of great stuff. And similarly, like I feel lucky every day we get to just create shows and make cool shit and then try and sell it to people, which is very hard, but really fun.
I know. If anybody's out there thinking about a career in television development, like you gotta have a backbone of steel, because literally your entire day is spent working on things that you think are absolutely amazing, and then have like 10 people in a row be like, that's okay.
Not for us. I'd watch it. But not for us.
You know what? That's, oh my God, so much fun. We're just not really in that area right now.
Right. Or we already have something in that area.
Oh God. And it's also heartbreaking when you like see like, you know, Deadline or something come out and you're like, oh, that idea that I pitched out 4 years ago, but nobody wanted it. Now it's a show. Oh, great.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh.
To know I was on top of it.
Do you each want to share a story or two of ideas that we've had that no one took seriously and are now successful shows? Because I have a couple and it grinds my gears.
Yeah. Literally, when I heard Crazy Rich Asians be announced as a movie, I was like, we got to find an amazing Crazy Rich Asian cast. Like, where are we going to look? And my issue is that I looked like in Singapore, aka I'm looking in Asia, when really I should have been looking in LA and in Texas, because that is where Bling Empire and House of Ho both are respectively located. And those were shows that ended up making it. And I was just like, oh. But also, like, nobody seemed like super excited when I brought that up as an idea. So
I remember I was in the room and I liked it a lot. But, you know, in development rooms,
they're tough rooms.
It's tough rooms and majority rules. And, you know, it didn't win the day, which in hindsight, I'll tell you what, at the same company and at several companies before, I'll tell you, I've pitched this idea at every company that I've ever worked at. I have been obsessed with glass blowing for a long time. I have family members who work tangentially to the marijuana industry. And through them, I learned about these really cool glass blowers for making all these cool things. I'm like, this needs to be a show. We got Forged in Fire. We got, you know, Top Chef, you know, all these different skill-based competition shows. Glass blowing, it's dangerous. It's high stakes. It could break at any moment. People are passing out from heat exhaustion and burning their fingers off, like, let's do this. And no one was interested forever.
Like, it really, like a non-starter. It was like, glass blowing? No one's buying that.
Too niche. Something you'll hear often if you work in development. Too niche, guys. Well, I'll tell you what. 5 years later, and to be fair, it was too niche at the time. And no American production company actually took a bet on it anywhere, because if you know about a little show called Blown Away, which is a glass blowing competition show on Netflix, that is literally verbatim the idea that I had. It's a great show, I think created by a Canadian production company. I don't remember the name, that was then acquired by Netflix. So it still took like an outside acquisition to get it on. But now that it's on, people freaking love it and people are talking about it. I'm like, I told y'all, That one stings still to this day.
I know. When I saw that release, I feel like I may have texted you.
Yeah, a couple people did. A couple people did. But anyway, now that you know a little bit about us, let's talk about the show. Let's talk about TV BFFs. And literally, you know, something that we hear a lot in what we do and a question that we need to ask ourselves whenever we're creating show ideas is, okay, why this idea and why now?
Honestly, this is a question we have to ask ourselves every day on the job, aka every single network wants to know, like, so why this? Why now? Right. Like, so we feel like it's only right to do it for our podcast.
So why this? Why now? I'll flip it around. Why now? I think we should touch on first because it speaks to like where the state of TV is and how much TV is out there and finding things to watch. So for me, TV BFFs is an interview podcast about the shows people love most. And for me, I've been asked that question a lot. What's your favorite show? What are you watching? I've always been the TV guy in my circle. I've made it a point to watch everything when I was able, you know, before the peak TV boom, but literally tried to watch every new, you know, network show. I wanted to be the guy that knew what was good and feel like I had pretty good taste. So yeah, I've always been, you know, the TV friend that you go to for a recommendation. But at a certain point recently, it became a lot harder to give recommendations only because it became a lot harder to watch all of the things, right? Peak TV has turned into, you know, what some have called tidal wave TV, where there's just, it's impossible to watch everything, try as you might. And I really try. But when someone's like, hey, have you seen this show? I'm finding myself more and more often saying, no, I haven't. It's on my list. My ever-long, never-ending...
The list.
Never finish it, but there's 50 shows on it list, right? But at the same time, there's so much new stuff coming up, but also you're seeing older stuff, the stuff that I did come up on, coming back around again, you know? Shows like Friends and The Office and Parks and Rec dominating streaming services, and shows like Halt and Catch Fire on AMC that was like a good show in the peak TV era, like post Mad Men around Breaking Bad, didn't get a lot of viewers. Not a ton of people talked about it, but all of a sudden it was added to Netflix and it's in the top 10 for 3 weeks. It's like TV is a flat circle, to borrow a phrase, right? Like it's kind of never ending. Old is new, new is old. You can't watch it all, but it's just around us. We're enveloped in it and we love it though. We want to watch it, but we need a different way, I think, to recommend shows.
I agree. So look, selfishly, I want to use this to kind of help me narrow down my own to watch list. I am not ashamed to say that TV raised me. I've never known a life without cable and literally all the channels. We had 4 TVs, had a VCR and with each of them. And in the 90s, my family was out there pioneering DVR, okay? All the TVs taped a different channel starting at 8 o'clock, and that was our video library. But as a grown up, with 2 small kids, I have really lost my way, like kind of knowing what's on and where it's on. And I know that I'm never going to watch it all. So I really want to hear what people are watching and why they're watching. And honestly, it's selfishly to help me narrow down my own to watch list, which is ever growing. So that's why I felt like this would be such a great idea, because I feel like a lot of people are also kind of in that same boat, as Dan, you were just saying, like, there's so much to watch. It's like, I kind of want to hear what people are watching and why they're watching it. Because honestly, look, even if I'm like never going to watch it, I'm looking at you, everything in the Marvel universe.
Come on.
I really don't mind hearing about it. And like, I want to hear about it because like maybe one day I'm going to be on a plane and I'm going to need to watch it. You know what I mean? Like, that's going to be a choice.
That's true, though. We all have our blind spots, right? Like, you know, yours might be Marvel. Mine's like Housewives.
Yeah.
You know, I have a pretty, outside of Top Chef, my Bravo blind spot's pretty big, you know? So everyone has one or several. So why not fill those in?
Yeah. So that's kind of the why now. But like, why this?
Well, instead of asking people, you know, what are you watching right now? Which is a question that we feel is pretty well covered. You know, a lot of podcasts to this effect and plenty of websites can tell you what's hot right now, what people are talking about, what's in the zeitgeist, if you will.
We love these.
We love these shows. And we'll talk about these, you know, when it makes sense. But we want to dive a little bit deeper than that. We want to look at a more comprehensive look at TV and iconic shows and really talk to people about what are the shows that made them who they are? What are the shows that have influenced their tastes, that have developed their interest? Basically, what's your personal TV history translated into an all-time list?
So look, if you're looking for a new way to get show recommendations, why not check out a TV BFF interview with one of our interesting and hilarious and TV-loving guests, and you can get a look at iconic TV shows from their perspective. And also by listening to them talk about their favorite shows and what was most influential or impressive or bingeable about them, it might inspire you to seek out something you haven't seen before. And along the way, hopefully you'll learn about the people and their lives and experiences and opinions in a way that we can all relate to. Because we all watch TV. No matter what else, even these people that are like, I want to watch TV. It's like, you watch TV. Okay, watch maybe TV. You're not watching, like, maybe you're not current on TV, but like, guess what? You watch TV. And if you don't, I don't trust you.
But even too, when people say, I don't watch TV, sometimes they just mean the new stuff. I don't keep up with TV, but they still watch TV. They watch Golden Girls or Sex in the City before bed, or they'll throw on something in the background. They'll throw on House Hunters or Chopped in the background, you know, like you watch TV.
Yeah.
It just might not be the way that.
Maybe you didn't see This Is Us on Tuesday. That's fine. I didn't either. It's on my TV. So what is this BFF criteria and how does it work?
Yes. Brandy, tell us.
Okay. So what it is, in every episode, we're going to ask guests to pick 6 shows in total with 2 shows in each of the 3 categories. The categories are best, favorite, and forever. Get it? BFF.
BFF. Here's the thing. We title things for a living as well. We love a good...
We love a good title.
Yeah.
And I will say, Dan is exceptionally good at coming up with the titles.
Oh, stop.
No, it's true.
I mean, you could say a little more. Yeah. So to describe these categories, the best shows are the ones that you think are the most artistic or well-executed or just overall the most well-made shows you've ever seen. Wow, that's the best thing I've ever seen. Your favorite shows are the ones that hold a place near and dear to your heart. They're personal to you. They might say something about, you know, how you grew up, why you love TV. These are the shows that mean something to you personally. And then the forever category, the best way to describe this is if you die tomorrow and in the afterlife, you get to choose 2 shows to watch in order from pilot to finale over and over for infinity. What are those? Basically, your desert island shows.
And, you know, will we talk about recent shows? Of course. How can we not? And especially if they start kind of moving into criteria territory. But the main event of each episode is going to be the guest interview where they pick their top 6 shows and reveal where they place them in the BFF criteria.
Now, there are a few rules because
Yes. We
have to make it interesting, create some stakes. I mean, this is what we do. We can't help it. We need to format.
So for each category, we're choosing from the 3 overall genres of TV, which are comedy, drama, and unscripted. And unscripted can mean everything from reality shows to documentary series to game shows, like unscripted. There must be multiple episodes, so no one-offs allowed. But other than that, you know, it can be anything. And there are, and this is very important to get out of the way right up top, there are no such things as guilty pleasures here.
Get that out of here.
We love TV. We love all TV. What you like is fine. Every person has their own flavor. Don't be ashamed. Don't be ashamed. You can tell us. So the only other rule is that you can't double up on a genre in any category. So if you pick a comedy in your best category, your other pick has to be either unscripted or drama. And we do this so that we don't just end up talking about like prestige dramas for the entire episode. Like we want some variety in there. You should have to think about these shows. So those are the rules.
Yeah. We ask you to mix it up.
Yeah. It's going to be fun.
So Brandy, do you want to talk about some of our favorite shows? Do you want to get into it?
Let's talk about some shows.
Okay. So now before we get into our BFF criteria, we're going to start the interview with every guest with talking about their almost shows. These are the shows that we're just on the outside left looking in. They didn't make the top 6, but we're close. So if the top 6 are your TV BFFs, these are still pretty good friends, right? Mm-hmm. You hang out a lot. They're influential. You learned a lot from them, but they didn't make the top 6. So before we get into our BFF.
They didn't get to come over during quarantine.
No, they're not in the bubble. So let's talk about the sizable list of shows, I think, that we both have that
very sizable.
That didn't make our criteria, but are almost shows. So I'll start. I'll go first.
Okay.
My first almost show that people might be surprised about. If you know me, it was appointment viewing every Sunday. I broke and canceled plans to watch this show. Game of Thrones did not make my criteria, but is a big deal show for me.
It's very surprising.
I know, right? I mean, this is how we kind of first started bonding over our shared TV was, mm-hmm. was at the production company every Monday. Did you watch Thrones? Let's talk about it. We had mm-hmm. Thrones pools. Like we were deep into it.
It was a great show.
It was a great show.
I can see why it didn't quite make the criteria, but I kind of thought that it might make the criteria.
Yeah, it was close. I'll tell you exactly why. It was up for the best category. It wasn't going to be a favorite. It wasn't going to be a forever, but the level of production on that show was astounding. I mean, next level.
It was amazing.
By the end, we're getting like feature films every episode, every Sunday. And, you know, if you've watched through to the end, there's a documentary about the making of that final season. It blew my mind. And working in TV, being on sets, being on productions, I've never seen anything like it. It was something to behold. So for those reasons, it was close. It didn't make it. And it might have, if not for the last two seasons, which I imagine we'll get into if guests bring up Game of Thrones. They're very controversial. Mm-hmm. I loved the first six seasons. Mm-hmm. After the first season, I read all the books. Couldn't get enough of it. Was, you know, deep in the rabbit hole, the theories, the, you know, reading every article I can get my hands on, like loved it, but just felt like they rushed the ending. I don't mind the choices that were made. I know it was in consultation with George R. R. Martin, like where people landed, and we won't spoil it, but like where people landed, I don't have a problem with. My problem was it just got there too fast. It's a hubris thing. If they weren't so like, you know what? We only need seven episodes in these last two seasons. Like, come on. Every season before this was a full 10 episodes. That's what you needed. If you did that, maybe it's in the criteria.
No. Well, for me, it was just that like you made us spend six seasons like deeply getting to know these characters. And then you just, everything all of a sudden it's like it takes six seasons to reach the sea. And then in two seasons, the world has ended. Like,
right.
That's not giving it away. The world doesn't end. But like, that's basically what happened.
No, but yeah. So Game of Thrones is the first on my almost list. Was that on your almost list? If not, what's your first entry?
My first entry on my almost list, it could have been one of my forever shows. And this is a show that it doesn't matter when it's on. I'll tune in. And that is a little show called Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Wow.
And somehow, I don't think I've seen every episode. Every single time I watch it, it's an episode I haven't seen. I think that like there've maybe been like two instances where I'm like, oh, I saw this one. But usually it's like, haven't seen it. So yeah, it's just a nice, comfortable show. They're making like delicious food. I want to eat all of it. I want to go to these restaurants.
Oh, yeah. It's the most just visually fattening show on all of television.
Yeah. Right? And it's just like, and you know, like, I don't mind Guy Fieri.
You're a guy gal.
Yeah. Like, I really enjoy the show. And they, Food Network plays it in like these strips where it's just on like all day. And it's just a really great thing to have on in the background.
It is on a lot. I'm a little bit surprised that this was so close to your list. We worked together for a long time and I don't recall you mentioning it often, but I do recall you referencing it often. Like, yeah, this, it's like the triple D of this. It's like, well, what are we doing a little bit like triple D? Like there's a lot of triple D and brainstorms coming from you. And then I don't think about it.
Yeah. It's great. And it's like such a simple premise. And it like, and I love that it like gives a little love to these restaurants that like probably don't get the love all that much, but like people know that they're really delicious. So yeah. So Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives almost made my forever list. And then another almost forever show.
Wow. Okay.
Is a show called Bar Rescue.
Oh, okay. Give me that John Taffer.
Shut it down. Shut it down. Honestly, shut it down is a phrase that has taken on new meaning in my life. I say it all the time. My husband says it all the time. But yeah, so Bar Rescue is another one. It started on Spike. Now it's on Paramount.
That's right.
They do strips of it on the weekends, starting in the late afternoon, going into the night. And I'll throw it on at any time. I've been to a couple of the bars that have been on there. My husband has been to the one that's in New Orleans with the barber chair.
Okay.
but yeah, I love John Taffer as a character. I can't believe that some of these places exist. It makes me never want to eat out again. Whereas Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, I'm like, oh my gosh, I love all these hole-in-the-wall places. And Bar Rescue's like, I'm never eating at a place again in a strip mall.
Oh my God, I love it. Wow, two interesting picks, but like both make sense for like, yeah, it's a vibe. It's, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to get, but it's different every episode. But do they start to feel a little samey, right? And is that something that you got to take into consideration?
You know, I don't think so, because somehow Bar Rescue keeps finding new kinds of hot messes. You would think that I've seen one hot mess, I've seen them all,
right.
But it's like, no, like they're like big jerk off guys at so many of these bars that like have a different jerk off vibe. And it's true. Amazing to see John Taffer yell at them.
Speaking of jerk off vibes, and wait for this segue. Another show on in my almost list is The Crown. Hello, Royal Family.
Okay. I'm obsessed with Harry and Meghan. Okay.
No, I think we all are. But I'll tell you what. Recent and also not so recent attitudes notwithstanding, the show itself, The Crown, which is not super polite to the royal family, which is one of the reasons why I like it, I think is fucking awesome. It's the most expensive show Netflix has ever done, and you can tell those episode budgets are on par with Game of Thrones.
Oh wow.
It is so well done. This was also in the conversation for best.
Okay.
I love it. I'm a bit of an Anglophile, and I think that also kind of connects to the Game of Thrones. Like that's kind of the more medieval aspect of it, whereas The Crown mm-hmm. is more of the modern history. But yeah, I love that shit. It's very escapist to me. The Crown, I think, is super well done. The acting is great. It's not in the criteria because it's not over yet.
Mm.
And I don't know how it's going to end. I think by the time it ends, it'll be at a pretty good length. There'll be, I think, 5 or 6 seasons of at least 10 in each. So like it's getting there, but it's not quite there yet. I want to see how they land it. I want to see what they do with the remaining Diana story. I want to see if they get really current. I hope they do and cover some of the most recent news of the last couple of years. We'll see how it ends. Could it eventually make the criteria? It has a chance.
Okay.
I really like it. I don't know what that says about me, but I really like The Crown.
I've never watched it. That's one of those ones that's been on my list, like literally like my list on Netflix. Right. and I know that I would like it because I do enjoy that stuff, but I just haven't sat down to watch it. And I know that it's going to be one of those things that when I do sit down to watch it, I'm watching it all. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So like, it's like, I'm like kind of excited to still kind of have it in the queue, you know?
Right.
And I like that there can't really be any spoilers on it.
Yeah, right. Basically, you know? It's like I just kind of like stop myself from Wikipedia and stuff if I don't want to find out what's happening with a specific
mm-hmm.
cast member. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think it's cool because it's not just royal family. There's also a pretty good focus on the prime ministers that are interacting mm-hmm. with the queen at any given time. So like mm-hmm. John Lithgow is Winston Churchill and Gillian Anderson as Margaret Thatcher in this most recent season. Just fucking bring it. So like that aspect of it is pretty cool too. And you do learn like these are all based on factual events. Like what's being said in the room, you know, is, you know, fictionalized for dramatic purposes, but like they're talking about stuff that really happened and it's cool.
Well, it's definitely on my list.
Crown's on your list. Check it out. What else is on your almost list?
On my almost list, and anybody listening to this who knows me will be like, I can't believe this on your almost list and not like in your criteria, but I'll explain. And that is The Real Housewives. All cities except for Miami, because I just never really got into it. So I never watched it. So I can't honestly have it in there. And Dallas, which I did watch for the first couple of seasons. But like, honestly, like they're too racist for me. I can't handle it.
I'm stunned, Brandi. You're telling me there's not a single Housewives franchise. There's not a single iteration of the Housewives on your criteria.
Not a single one.
Wow.
And this is the and you know, it was,
what happened?
It was almost in there for a favorite.
Okay.
But I had to go with a different show. Cause when I think about it, like in terms of like how the shows make me feel, the show that I went with is what makes me feel good.
Okay.
And it's not that the Housewives doesn't make me feel good. Cause I love the Housewives. It's like, it's soap opera for today. You know, mm-hmm. like it's my version. It's my guiding light. It's my, all my children. But you know, I don't know, like maybe it will end up making the list.
Right.
You know,
which iterations have the best chance?
Potomac and it's a three-way tie between Potomac, Atlanta, and New York.
I love how only Housewives have so many. You can have a three-way tie for first.
I know. Like, I mean, because the other ones, it's like Beverly Hills, it's fine. OC, bleh, even though like I started out on OC and I've been watching it ever since. So I definitely like have a real history with the Housewives. Like I've gone to see like live shows. with them in Atlantic City. No big deal.
Right.
I watched the reunion once at one of their apartments. Luann and Dorinda sent me messages when I had my first baby. And this was not a cameo. This was my friend worked on the show and was like, can you send my friend a message to send me baby? But, you know, I have a special place in my heart for all of these ladies, but it just, and when we get into the criteria, like, I think it'll become apparent why I didn't put it in there, but that's why this is so tough, because you can't have two reality shows.
I know it is tough. And I think this is an important place to note that, you know, we're talking about things that might eventually make the criteria. The criteria is a picture of a moment in time, right? This isn't, you know, your laminated, chisel it in stone, it's never changing list. You can, the list can change. It can move, it can morph, it can evolve based on, you know, new shows, but also like rewatching old shows. Like, you know, there was a major shift that upended my entire criteria because I went back and watched some older seasons of a show that's on there and it changed its placement, right? So these things can change and shift. For instance, one show that just missed out for me that was teetering in the favorite, maybe best, but more favorite, I think, was Schitt's Creek. Which I loved. I think a lot of people have talked a lot about it recently, so we don't need to get too much into it, but brilliant show, so well written, so well acted. Unlike most, it didn't take me a bunch of episodes to get into it. I was hooked pretty early on, which I think helped, but I've only watched it through once. And I think that especially for comedies, I can in good conscience displace what's on my criteria with this one after only one watch through. But you know, maybe after a couple more rewatches, does it become something that supplants, you know, the comedy that I do have on there, at least in the spot? It might, you know, it might. But Schitt's Creek, strong show. If you haven't checked it out by now, what are you doing? And move out from the rock that you're living under.
Yeah, we know you have Netflix.
Exactly. One more comedy I wanted to bring up, though, which was also could have been a favorite, is Friends.
Not a forever?
Not a forever, because it just... it doesn't hold up as much in recent years. If we were having this conversation 3 years ago, yeah, probably. It probably would have been a forever show. But I think some other comedies that are also heavily in syndication and on repeats and on the dial, on the grid, have kind of jumped over it. But I grew up on Friends, you know, and Simpsons was close to this as well. Like, I watched The Simpsons with my dad every night. I watched Friends with my mom. And I love Friends. I still laugh at the jokes. I will always, always love... and we'll watch at any moment of any day, the episode, which is my favorite of the series. It's called The One with All the Embryos. It's the one where Phoebe's trying to get pregnant. And meanwhile, everyone else is playing their own personal game show about who's going to win the apartment, who's going to move out. Or I think what it was is if the girls win, the guys need to get rid of the chicken, the duck. And if the guys win, they get the girls' much better apartment. And it's just... I mean, I love game shows. And I think this honestly sparked some of that interest. Like, wait, you can just do this? You can just make these things up? You can just create these games? And it's so fun and so exciting. And lightning rounds. I'm so good at lightning rounds. And like all of this, I loved it. I think about that episode all the time. And then it famously ends with, I think, Giovanni Ribisi, who plays Phoebe's brother. My sister's gonna have my baby. It's a iconic episode, and I think about it all the time, but it just doesn't, yeah, it just doesn't hold up to some of the others. So, but Friends was close.
I almost put Seinfeld on my almost list, and then I ended up taking it off because I realized that, like, I just don't have the same relationship with it that I did growing up.
Oh.
And so, like, it wasn't ever really a contender. But the next thing that I have on my almost list is, you guessed it, another reality show. Can you guys tell? Like, I love reality shows.
No way.
But it's another one that could have been in my forever bucket. I have seen all the iterations of it, and I love it. I love watching it. And that is Chopped.
Ooh.
It's such a great format. And I love seeing what's going to be in the box and like what they're going to do with it. And I feel like that carries over into my own cooking. It's like, oh, what am I going to make tonight? And it's like, well, I've got this, and this. Like, let's figure it out.
Yeah.
And it also, it's just like, it's just a nice, like, relaxing thing to have on in the background. But like, I can't not finish an episode once I've started it.
Right. It's got those beats.
If I invest, I'm like, I got to know who wins. Like, this guy's being like super cocky right now. He's got to go home.
Right.
Like, you think, I'm sorry, you think you're too good. Like, I need my girl to win right now.
Yeah.
You know,
the thing about Chopped that I will say though, is And then speaking from like the development aspect of things, this is another one kind of like the Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives that is, I think, the most like this show meets that show of all time. Like I have personally used Chopped as a reference dozens and dozens and dozens of times because it pioneered the classic 4-3-2-1. The 4-3-2-1 standalone elimination structure is just, it's set in stone and it's because of this show.
It's a great format jumping off point. Like if you know that you need to format something, it's like, well, let me think about it. Let me think about this like Chopped.
Right. I either think, can I chop this or do I Top Chef this to use another food show? Like, is it arced? Is it standalone? Because it might be the perfect standalone format.
Yeah.
Right? It's inspired it's like everything from, you know, if you like Forged in Fire, you can thank Chopped. You know, anything along those lines.
I was in the development room with Forged in Fire, and that's exactly what happened. It was like, what can be our Chopped?
right. And it freaking works. It works. Okay, I'll give you an unscripted one that's in my almost category, but it's not the unscripted that you're thinking. And this speaks to our definition of unscripted. It's not just reality. I almost put ESPN's 30 for 30 documentary series.
Okay.
In my criteria, because I'm a sucker for a sports documentary, love them. And there's tons of episodes, there's tons of seasons. And it's, this one may have been controversial. This may have been a conversation if I did put it in the criteria, because you could look at it as
a bunch of one-offs,
a whole bunch of one-offs, but it's united under 30 for 30. And here's how I know this, because my brother loves sports docs even more than me. He's the one that tells me all the ones to watch. He got season one of ESPN's 30 for 30 and a box set, and it was labeled season one. Therefore, I submit that there are seasons of 30 for 30, and I think it would be a valid pick if it were to go into criteria.
Okay.
I was thinking about it as best. I was thinking about it as forever, because there's still new stuff coming out, so you can still kind of see new stuff as it comes. The thing is, I don't love all the sports equally. And there's going to be a lot of docs I'm like, oh, I got to sit through 2 hours of this story I have no interest in. Mm-hmm. That's going to happen. So it didn't make my forever list. And as far as, you know, in the best category, there's other things that I think are more deserving. But yeah, 30 for 30.
It's a good one. You
know? And there's a couple that I'll watch anytime they're on. Survive in Advance, about the NC State run in the NCAA tournament with Jim Valvano, with the famous SB speech, don't give up, don't ever give up. I mean, I'm getting chills and getting emotional. Just got to think about it right now. It makes me cry every time I see it. Same with my dad. Same with most men who love sports in my life. Watch the Jim Valvano speech and it's instant puddle. And you can't not love it.
So I guess if I check it out on 30 for 30, I just check out that one. I mean, I'm sure I've seen a 30 for 30 before, but one is not coming to mind right now.
And it's really, and it's been the thing that's inspired a lot. Like if you watch Tiger, inspired by 30 for 30. OJ Made in America was a 30 for 30 production.
Oh.
You know, that was technically under the 30 for 30 banner.
Okay.
So 30 for 30, I think, is actually my only reality almost pick.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I have another reality almost pick.
Okay. No surprises. I love it.
It's a competition show. Kids Baking Championship.
I knew this was going to be somewhere. Yes. Let's talk
about
it.
It's on Food Network. I was put onto it, I think, Dan, by you and by our former colleague, Steve.
I think Steve started it.
Steve
put us all onto it. Yeah. Shout out, Steve.
Guys, this show is just the best. And I know like a lot of people really like Great British Baking Show, which I've only seen a couple of episodes. I don't mind it. It's fine. But I feel like why people love that show is like, you know, it's just so nice. They're so nice to each other. They're making good food. It's like, it's an easy watch.
Yeah. I anticipate we're going to get that in someone's forever category at some point. Have to.
But Kids Baking has like all of that kind of like wholesome niceness with just like the cutest kids you've ever seen. Like some of them you kind of want to strangle, like, and they're the worst, but they all like help each other out and they are really talented for the most part. There's some challenges where I'm like, you are 11, but it's just such a sweet show. And I'm just always in such a good mood after I see it. I think this could have gone into my favorite category. Cause it's not necessarily like the best show. Like there's nothing different or unique about how it's made. You know what I mean? And I feel like for me in the best category, like I need it to have some of that, like not like prestige DNA, but at least like bring something new to the table. And this is just very much straight up, just like a competition show.
Yeah.
But it is one of my favorite shows. But again, I couldn't put more than one reality show in my bracket. So.
And if you got to kick one out, maybe it's the one where you do need to watch at least two children cry in every episode of this show.
I know.
It is a prerequisite. You got to watch kids cry, which can be, for me, was uncomfortable. Like, I did not like that part. That made me uncomfortable all the time.
I mean, sometimes I cried with them. Like, they were so, I felt so, their little faces just crumple when they lose. And I'm like, oh, that's the worst. Guy, just, you have your youth. That's what I wanted to tell them. Like, you're still so young.
Yeah.
Like,
now, Brandy, so your daughter Yuli is how old now?
She is four.
She's four. So has she expressed interest in baking? And if so, are you starting to groom her in that direction to hopefully get her on the show at one point?
Listen, this is the deal. I keep seeing people are like, oh, like I got my daughter into this, or I got my son into this when they were four. And like, you know, and they've been doing it since then. And like, they I knew that they were so talented in it because they were showing such a, you know, like such talent. And I'm like, I think we have missed all of the boats. she's really good at drawing. She's always been good at drawing. Like my husband's family, he comes from a family of artists, so it's not a surprise. But
okay, we need a kids drawing championship then, is what we're saying.
She's not a dancer. She always says that she wants to bake with me, but then when I have her try to help, she then gets bored and is off. She's like, can I see the iPad? I'm like, okay, well, I thought we were doing this together, but all right, I'll do it myself. But she also always has big ideas about what to make. So my birthday's coming up and she was like, well, you're going to have a strawberry cake. And I was like, okay. And like last year for my husband's birthday, she's like, you're going to have a chocolate cake. And I made him a chocolate cake and it was amazing. I was like, oh my gosh, she's a visionary. But yeah, so.
You know what you got to do, especially if she's a good little artist, is get her in the decoration aspect, decorating cookies, decorating the cakes, because then, you know, these kids can bake, but that's just simple memorization, right? If you can memorize a couple recipes, you're fine. Where they all kind of miss the mark, to be polite, is in the decorating. Those things look terrible sometimes on that show.
I will say the most recent season, I was very impressed at the decorating skills. I was like, wow, you guys have been watching this and like practicing. And one of the kids said in her interview, like things were like kind of going wrong for her. And she, in her interview, she was like, I have been practicing for this all year and now this happens. And I was like, oh my God, they really work for this. And it just made, I just loved them even more hearing her say that.
That is really cute. It's an adorable show. It really is. We all got hooked for a reason, of course.
So yeah, Kids Baking Championship. What do you got?
Another almost forever show. And this one was really very close. These next couple actually were really, really very close. And then there's a couple that are newer that, you know, we'll maybe make it. But yeah, this next one is Saturday Night Live. And that show, it could have been close to, I mean, honestly, it could have been in any category. You know, I mentioned I had a stint working at SNL when I was a page. It was the most exciting, thrilling, chaotic, stressful, fun 5 months of my life to this day. It was something else in the degree of difficulty. Shit on the quality of the episodes all you want, but you will never understand unless you're there having to do that, how difficult it is to write a 90-minute show in literally 3 days and then figure out how to produce it and build all the sets and do all the costumes and the wigs and choreograph how those sets are going to move in a tiny studio that can only really fit 3 sketches at once. And yet somehow there's 12 in every episode. Like, the degree of difficulty should be talked about more, I think. Mm-hmm. Because I worked there, it came with a lot of good memories. It touches me personally, so it was close to favorite. But I think it might be, and I hope someone talks about this, because I want to talk about SNL as a forever show, because it might be the perfect forever show, just because there's so many episodes. You'll never get bored. Every 4 minutes, something, if you don't like it, wait 4 minutes, it's going to change. Mm-hmm. It's a commentary on society and culture, and kind of, if you're in the afterlife, kind of you get to relive Earth's greatest hits, and then there's still new episodes. It's going to go on forever. So by the time you get to the end of a watch and go back, you get to the end the second time, there's a whole new slew of episodes waiting for you. I don't know. SNL, strong argument for a forever show, and just like by a hair missed it for me.
Yeah, that's a strong contender. Yeah, and I love that, like, everybody, like, has, like, it's like, oh, but SNL is, like, it's like not like it was in, like, the 80s, not like it was in the 90s, not like it's like, listen, every single episode has some duds.
Yeah.
Like, every single episode has some bangers and some duds.
That's true. There's pretty much, you can always count on two really good ones. Mm-hmm. Update is always decent. There's mm-hmm. going to be some duds. And if you like the music, that's a really solid episode. You know what I mean? Like,
I have great SNL memories. I got to see two shows. That's a really big deal for me.
Yeah, I've been privileged to be able to be in the studio on the floor for a couple episodes. And yeah, it's something mm-hmm. special. It is yeah. really something special. But enough about SNL. Didn't make the criteria. Brandy, what else almost made it for you?
I guess next up for me, coming out of SNL, this is a good segue, because one of the shows that almost made it into my favorite, like it was a toss up between best and favorite, is 30 Rock.
Oh, classic.
I just think that 30 Rock is just one of the funniest shows I've ever seen. Just like, I love the writing on it. I love the acting on it. Like, it just, everything about it cracks me up. My favorite episode is the one that Paul Rubens is in when he's like the Austrian prince. It's like, thank you for coming to my party. Like, I love it. And yeah, like my roommate for a number of years like worked on it. So I got the chance to go to a couple of rap parties and I got to meet like Tina Fey and Alec Baldwin. Like I got to go to like the series ending party. And I have like a really great picture of like me and two of my friends and Tina Fey. And like she definitely was like, oh God, who are what? Another picture. And it's just like, I was like, you got to do it. And like my face in the picture looks like I'm saying, you got to do it. Thanks. But yeah, like I got to go to a couple of table reads.
Oh
like
my gosh.
It just, yeah, it, I just thought it was a really, it was such a great show.
Yeah.
And I feel like I want, and, but the reason that I didn't put it into my list is because like, I don't feel like I've watched it enough.
Same.
Like I feel like I watched it so much when it was out. And like a little bit after it ended, I was still kind of watching, but I don't feel like it ever like was on in syndication, like Seinfeld or a Friend or The Office or something.
Yeah,
this is definitely a show that if it was on in syndication, like I would have put it on to just watch. And whenever I do see that it's on, I put it on.
I wonder if they're just like, they just missed the number of seasons that you needed for a while to get on syndication or something. I don't know, but I feel similarly like I've only ever seen it once through. Week to week as it was airing. And then I think I had DVDs for early seasons, maybe like seasons 1 and 2 that I would mm-hmm. rewatch a little bit here and there. But yeah, kind of like the Schitt's Creek thing. I've only ever seen it through once. And this mm-hmm. one, it's been so long ago. This is high on my list of if I need a comedy mm-hmm. to rewatch, like this is high on the list. I know I would really, really love it. And it's nostalgic. Reminds me of being a page too. So
it's such a good and funny show. And another comedy that would have been on either my best or my favorite list is called The Comeback with Lisa Kudrow. There are only two seasons of it, but they are two of the funniest seasons I've ever seen. And for those of you who don't know what it's about, Lisa Kudrow plays an actress who the name is leaving me right now. I can't believe it because it's like a big part of the
Valerie Parrish.
Valerie Cherish.
That's right. Valerie Cherish.
Yeah, Valerie Cherish. And it's kind of like a mockumentary as she is trying to like kind of mount like her comeback. Like she used to be a really famous sitcom actress, but like not really famous, but just like, you know, like mm-hmm. people knew who she was. But
it's such a great character.
It's such a great character. Like it's the first season was in like the early 2000s and then it went off for like 10 years and then premiered again for another like 8 episodes or something. Like I think in the mid 20 teens. And like, it was kind of set up as like found footage and like kind of behind the scenes mockumentary stuff. And like Lisa Kudrow is a gem. She is a national treasure. And yes. If you didn't know it from when she was Phoebe on Friends, like you, or if you didn't know when she was like she was Michelle and Romy and Michelle. She's so funny. She's so good. I love her.
She is so good. Yeah. And that show too, did this, like it took shows like The Office and like Modern Family that were big and like kind of flipped it around. You know, not only, you know, the main character is a woman, but like took that Michael Scott lack of self-awareness, but like added an extra layer of heart, I think. And then like mm-hmm. really played with the mockumentary, like You saw, like you said, like the behind the scenes of it, like really fucking genius show in a lot of ways.
And it was spot on in how like the take on the entertainment industry and kind of like how things go down, like how producers talk, how, you know, like kind of what's going on behind the scenes, like from what you see on TV.
It didn't romanticize Hollywood in that.
No, you know. Not at all. And also like what it means to be an aging actress.
Yeah.
And like what that means for like your career going forward. So yeah, the reason that it didn't make it onto the list is just because, I mean, it was only two seasons and it's another one that like, I want to go back and just watch it more. You know, I feel like I've probably seen it all the way through like maybe three times, but like I could watch it again.
That is a good show. Gosh, I could, all these things. I'm like, that could use a rewatch. That could use a rewatch. Mm-hmm. There's a reason these were close to making our criteria, Brandy. They're all very good shows.
Yeah.
But they're not true. Our BFFs. One show that's really important to me that almost made the list. And I will say a little behind the curtain here. So we have actually recorded a few episodes already. We won't tell you which ones or who with. But one of those episodes made me almost like, remembered this show in a way that like I can't believe it wasn't in the conversation, and as soon as it was brought up, I'm like a bullet, I'm like, that needs to be in consideration, and I almost put it in favorite. This show is Battlestar Galactica. Holy cow. And the reason for this is going in, it's not the best show you've ever seen, although it was one of those mystery box sort of sci-fi shows. If you haven't seen it, it's a sci-fi show basically, like, and this isn't a spoiler, happens very early on, the machines that, it's like in the future, space travel, all this stuff, but the machines that people create become so smart that they start killing the humans, and then you can't even distinguish them from the humans. They're called Cylons. It's this whole thing. It was a commentary on, like, you know, terrorism and the Bush White House and like all these really interesting, you know, aspects to it. But for me, it got me into sci-fi. Growing up, I was a big fantasy kid, Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, you know, all that stuff. But wasn't a huge sci-fi guy. My dad was. He loved Star Wars and Star Trek, and I watched them and enjoyed them. But it wasn't until Battlestar Galactica that I was like, oh, this is the fucking sci-fi spaceship, you know, show for me. And it really kind of clicked that back on for me and allowed me to enjoy and go back into Star Wars and other stuff and really enjoy it. It also got me through a really hard time. It got me through a big unemployment stretch, and I binged this whole thing. And it became my life for, you know, like a month. Battlestar Galactica. Very well done. If you like sci-fi stuff and somehow haven't seen it, oof, highly recommend.
I feel like I've heard, like, a lot of people like it, and I never was into sci-fi stuff, so it never crossed my mind to watch it. But I also was never into, like, medieval and fantasy stuff, and I really enjoyed Game of Thrones.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah, and I think it kind of transcends the genre a little bit. There's a lot of big themes and interesting developments. It's a really, really good show. Ronald D. Moore, who created it, has gone on to do other really cool things. Like, he did Outlander. He's doing For All Mankind, Apple show right now. Good stuff. And then one more I want to talk, the only other drama on my list, on my almost list. I love this show. This one is in the conversation because I mentioned that, you know, I've always been a go-to for what should I watch. And this is a recommendation I will give all the time. Not enough people have seen this. If they're like, I want some sort of crimey something or other, I want some sort of British something or other, I want something on Netflix, it's always Peaky Blinders. The Peaky fucking Blinders. I love this show. It hits all of the gangster crime. It's like the opposite side of Downton Abbey, which actually, now that I think about it, maybe that would have been an almost list if not for The Crown. But it's like, it's about the same time. It's post-World War I, but it's where Downton Abbey is like, here's all the fancy folk. This is like, we're in Birmingham and we're gangsters and it's dirty and it's messy and it's violent and sex, drugs, and Peaky Blinders. And boy, it is a fun show. It's still going. I think it's 5 seasons deep. They're still making new seasons. And I think they've announced one more season and then a movie to cap it off, which I'm very interested to see. All this to say, Peaky Blinders, if you ask me for a recommendation, you might get this. And depending on how it ends, it might sneak in. I really like this show.
You know, honestly, it's been on my list, like the literal my list on Netflix for a really long time, and I haven't watched it, but you're maybe convincing me to like go give it a chance. Because it seemed like I would like it, but something else always comes up.
You really would. Like it feels prestige-y, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it came up in that kind of anti-hero era, so it has some mm-hmm. of those vibes. It's also just, yeah, it's just like a solid can't miss show. Definitely watch with captions on though, because boy, that Birmingham accent is rough.
Listen, I watch everything with captions on.
Yeah, you and I both. That's why we're TV BFFs. So do I. So yeah, that's the last drama that was in contention. I got a couple more, but what else do you have?
I have a drama as well. I think it's actually, no, I have two dramas on mine. So first drama is Black Mirror, which is, it would have been in my best category, I think.
Yeah.
Cool. It's just, I love the anthology format of it. And I also just think it's just so smart and terrifying.
Yeah.
But in like such a real way, like all of their futuristic tech doesn't feel futuristic at all. It feels like, oh yeah, why can't I just put that contact in and see everything?
Right.
Oh, why can't I bring my dead husband back?
Yeah. Put that egg in my temple and let me do some weird shit, you know?
Yeah. And I just love, like, I am a big, like, I love Stephen King books and I love scary movies. And I don't really watch a lot of scary movies anymore. And this kind of hit the mark for me for like something that was really scary to watch.
Yeah.
But
it's scary in a, like to your, like not jump scares, like a psychological existential, like shit, this isn't too far off. What if?
I know.
It's a lot of what if anxiety and scariness, which mm-hmm. Hits. It really hits.
Yeah. Like I think like my favorite episode, I mean, I think it's a lot of people's favorite episodes, but like the San Junipero, obviously, where mm-hmm. they like, but because that also just like made me feel like, oh, like that would be a great ending.
Right.
Like
yeah.
I would like for my consciousness to be uploaded to a huge computer. Like I'll go on like that. That would be great. I feel like when I look at the list of like, you know, Vulture does all those lists of like the best episodes and stuff, mm-hmm. and they always put this one at the bottom, but it's the one with the mom that tracks the daughter.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously I love it because Jodie Foster directed it, and Jodie Foster is my favorite actress, even though like she just said some like really suspect shit about like Mel Gibson, but like I can't cancel everyone, like whatever, like everybody can have their own opinion, but like Jodie Foster, terrible take. and I also really like the Bandersnatch.
Bandersnatch was cool.
It was really cool.
That was cool. I like that a lot. And Inspired, so I was working with a company that does a lot of crime shows and inspired us to like, is there a Bandersnatch for crime? Like that was one mm-hmm. of those things like Bandersnatch 4 when interactive TV was hot for a minute and then clearly hasn't seemed to really take off. But
yeah.
my favorite Black Mirror episodes, the three that I think of first are probably Entire History of You, which I think was in the very first mm-hmm. season, which mm-hmm. is the one you're talking about.
I think that was the first episode, right? Where they put the, that's where.
No,
the
first episode was the Prime Minister with the pig.
Oh, you know what? It was, I watched it backwards.
Oh, yeah.
So it was the first episode I saw.
Yeah. Love that episode. Cause like, yeah. I've always kind of wanted that tech. Like that was really intriguing to me. The John Hamm one.
That's a good one.
Because that was just the most brutal ending, I think, of in so many ways. That mm-hmm. one just, and it was like a one-off. It was like a holiday special. Cause it was like taking place in winter or something. And then the one with Jesse Plemons, where he like,
yes,
the Star Trek homage, which also a little bit of BSG energy in there too. Like mm-hmm. that one I thought was really good.
Michaela Cole was in it too.
That's right. She was. Holy shit. Wow. Good drop.
I also really love the Miley Cyrus episode. And I have the two Ashley O songs on my Spotify.
Wow. I got it. That's a controversial take. I don't know if a lot of people love that episode, Brandy.
I love it.
What did you say? Did you mention the cover though at the end? She did that cover of that song too. That was really good.
Oh no, I don't have that song. I have the two Ashley O originals like you see the music videos for.
Yeah, and then like Miley just did like a grunge cover at the end, over the credits. That was really freaking good. I like that a lot.
Yeah, so Black Mirror, I do think is one of the best shows, but it didn't make my cut. And then one more drama from me. This is a show that like really took me through a lot of years in like the mid to late 2000s.
Okay.
On Sundays, on hungover Sundays after partying so hard on Saturday and just like nursing a hangover, ordering in food, hanging out with friends, Law and Order SVU on USA. Honestly, Law and Order, like I loved it because I mean, I love the show. I'm one of those people that loves crime podcasts, crime shows. Like I will watch like true crime stuff. Like I will watch it. Mm-hmm. I will listen to it. And SVU, I just loved. I love Olivia and Stabler. I fell off a little bit because I've never really watched it live.
Oh, okay.
I've really only watched it on USA.
Right. I feel like that's most people's experience with it though, you know?
Yeah. It's like, I think I maybe watched like a couple of episodes live because they were going to be like big events. But I remember this one time my mother-in-law was at my house and we started, because like USA will have like specials that will run of like, you know, like these are all Stabler episodes or these are Olivia episodes or these are like that blonde woman's episodes or like the one DA.
Right.
They were doing a bunch of a series of episodes about the chief when some stuff went down with him. But anyway, my mother-in-law was watching with us and she was like, this is really good. It's like, I really enjoy when I come over and watch television with you.
Aww, that's really nice.
Like, this is great. She's like, I need to see the next one. But yeah, SVU, I felt like made me completely more aware of my surroundings. I'm like, this looks like an SVU scene right here.
Right.
Like, we're not going under this bridge.
Did you already say where you might've put it? Where was this?
This would have gone in my forever shows.
I was going to say, this feels like an almost forever show. I feel like a lot of, if you're a true crime fan, and we've had, you know, behind the curtain here, we've had several of these conversations, you know, criteria conversations with friends and family and, you know, testing out the concept. And what I find interesting is that like tons of people are huge fans of true crime, but very rarely does a true crime, like unscripted doc series, make it into a criteria. But like Law and Order, I think we're going to get. I think there's a lot of Law and Order super fans. And if you're a fan of the true crime space, this is a good way to kind of touch on that and talk about that through the criteria, I think, you know?
Yeah. No, like I Snapped was one show that like almost could have, it was an almost show.
Okay.
Because like I used to love some Snapped.
More of an acquaintance than a friend.
Yeah, it's more of an acquaintance because I haven't really watched it in a long time. But like my mom and I, we can watch some Snapped. One, like it's just, oh, it's Sunday, Snap Sunday, y'all. Snap okay Sunday.
Okay, I have two shows left on my almost list.
Okay.
The first, they're both comedies, couldn't be more different, I don't think. The first one though, now that you mention it, there's some SVU vibes, I will say, in some of these scenes. But I love this show to death. This was almost a favorite, almost a forever, and could be in the conversation for best, just the way it keeps morphing and changing and growing. But It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
That would have been a great forever pick.
I know.
Because I think it's going to be on forever.
I think it's going to be on forever. There's so many episodes. And you might say, but aren't those characters awfully unlikable? Yeah, they are. But I don't seem to mind it. It's kind of like that Seinfeld effect of, they're objectively bad people, but it's okay. But on top of that, especially with some of the recent seasons, some of these characters, the Mac character specifically, I think you could argue for Charlie a little bit as well, but some real character growth and some real shifts, not just in the characters, but of how the creative team, I think, has approached the show. Like you watch those earlier episodes and it's crass, it's inappropriate. A lot of shit wouldn't fly now, but I think they know that and have done a really good job of shifting the writing of the show and how we view the characters as an audience to be a show that could work still in 2021. And also, for what it's worth, I was the first person that I knew who watched this show. And I told so many people to watch this show. You're welcome. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia for your Syracuse, New York fan base, because everyone in college, the show came out, I think, in 06. I was a freshman, sophomore in college. I remember having a friend over to my parents' house, I think, for a long weekend, because I lived kind of close to campus. And we watched the whole first season. And then it's all we talked about for the next 3 months and told everyone we knew about it. And to this day, we still have inside jokes about it. It's awesome. Awesome. Awesome show. This in SNL, I think we're probably the two closest to really being on the criteria, I would say.
I love Always Sunny. I always like it's I'm never not laughing while watching it, right. Even if it's I'm like, oh my God, that was so offensive. But like I'm still laughing at it.
And a lot of it is favorite character. 1, 2, 3, go.
D.
I'm a Charlie guy. We'll always be a Charlie guy. He's just
D. I love D.
Because even when he doesn't know enough to be offensive in some way. You know what I mean?
I mean, Charlie is really funny. Wait, what's his girlfriend's name that hates him? And it's not really his girlfriend.
Her name is Waitress. She doesn't have a real name.
Okay, she doesn't have a name. Okay.
Her name was Waitress.
I was like, well, I should remember this. What was her name?
Who's his life in real life? And then Mac and Dee are actually met on the show and are together. And
they met on, I didn't realize they met on the show.
I'm pretty sure they met on the show.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So that one was really close. And again, you never know. You know, I haven't, it's on a lot. So I'll catch it. And every time it's on, it's a go-to. If I see it on the grid and I'm like, yeah, I got 20 minutes to finish this off. Let's see what the gang's up to. The other comedy that almost made it, and this one was very new, and we're gonna have to keep an eye on this as the show progresses and as it keeps coming. Ted Lasso.
I've heard only good things.
Oh my stars! So the thing about Ted Lasso is it is such a just feel good, heartwarming, laugh out loud, tears down my face. Like I can't speak highly enough about it. I was late to the game. People were telling me about it. I'm like, yeah, I like Jason Sudeikis, but he's kind of the same character and everything. You know, I love soccer, football, Europeans, but like, you know, I haven't been in it in a while. I don't really know what's going on. It can wait. And I'm mad that I didn't watch it sooner. Because the thing with this is, and I may have mentioned this before, but I think Mike Schur has said, give any comedy, throw out the first 6 episodes. It doesn't know what it is yet. Doesn't know who the characters are. And you'll hear from people who are like, oh, I haven't gotten into that. You know, it wasn't funny right away. And people quit comedies all the time for this reason. Ted Lasso had none of that. From episode 1, hooked. It was funny. You had a great sense of the characters, of the set of the prem. Like, it was a fully formed show on arrival that I don't think I've seen since maybe like It's Always Sunny that like knew what it was on arrival and really hasn't shifted much in its tone and its style. Ted Lasso. I'm telling you, watch out for this show. It's going to do some really big things, I think.
Look, I'm sold. It's on Apple Plus TV.
Apple TV or, Plus.
Apple whatever. TV Plus.
And that's the thing, too. I think it didn't get as much look because it's just harder. Not a lot of people have that service. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to get more recognition. It was renewed for 2 seasons after its first season aired. Like, so Apple knows what they got. And yeah, by the time that's over, that might take a spot on my criteria. I freaking loved that show. And it's the only like truly new show, I think, on my almost list.
Okay. All right. Well, my last almost show is a comedy and also a musical.
Ooh.
And it is Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which, you know, it could have gone into my best category because I do think that, I mean, it's, first of all, putting up a musical for every episode is a feat.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not only was it a musical, but it was just like super smart writing. Like there was choreography. There was like, I mean, just everything about the show was great. And when you look at the show as a whole, I think it's 4 seasons and they kind of wrote it as a 4 season show. And the arc that the main character, Rebecca, like what happens to her is, it's just amazing. Cause it's called Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And by the last 2 seasons, she actually, she has a mental illness diagnosed.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they really talk about that and how, you know what I mean? And so so all of the things that she was doing in the first and second seasons that you're like, oh my God, Crazy Rebecca. You start to see that like, oh, like that was really like a symptom and a manifestation of like this actual very serious like mental illness that she had. But it's not like they didn't make light of it.
Right.
But
it didn't become a drama, right?
It didn't become a drama, but they did like really humanize it. And it's just like, no, like mental illness doesn't look like what you think it looks like.
Right.
Which I thought was like really smart and like really, really well done. And just like as a woman, I felt like they just brought a lot of stuff to the table, like talking about stuff that you don't ever hear people talk about. Like there's like a whole song where she talks about how like she hopes that she doesn't like smell like fish.
Oh, wow.
you know what I mean? Or like there's like songs about like periods and like, I don't know.
Like, and these songs too are like you said, they're like this show has gone on like tour, right? Like there's albums.
The songs are really good. Like I'm trying to remember, I have so many favorite ones. And what's so great about the songs is that they are all like from like genres, right? So they'll like, they were like the sexy getting ready song. Right. And, like, you know what I mean? It was just like an R&B thing. Oh, and she had, I just looked it up because I wanted to make sure I was right. She was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder.
Oh, okay. And
because like the crux, the show all starts with her. She's like a high powered lawyer in New York, but she's like kind of lonely, doesn't really like her life. And then she runs into this guy who was her boyfriend for like 2 weeks at camp when they were in like eighth grade. And she's like, oh my God, it's a sign from God that I'm supposed to be with Josh Chan. So she moves to California to be with Josh Chan, but Josh Chan has a girlfriend.
Oh no.
And so she ends up like ingratiating herself with like Josh Chan and all his friends, and every character like gets a real arc, which I really liked because they could have all just been kind of support for Rebecca.
Yeah.
But they all get an arc. It's a really, really good show.
Wow. And
if you haven't seen it, check it out. I think it's on Netflix. Yeah. Rachel Bloom is amazing.
I love it. So Brandy, so these are our almost shows. These are shows that we clearly love a lot. I think you can tell by listening the impact, the meaning of these shows for us. And these aren't even our criteria picks. So you can only imagine. So you can see we're getting to the end of the episode here. But before we go, Brandy, and this is something I didn't run by you. We didn't talk about this before. I'm springing this on you. This is a new wrinkle. This is a new element that I haven't pitched yet for the show, but I think it'd be a really fun idea.
Okay.
Here's what I think we should do. Cause these almost shows, I think there's more here than might be in our criteria that each of us hasn't seen yet. Mm-hmm. I think in our criteria, we know enough about each other to maybe guess at what's going to be there. And I feel like I have a pretty good idea and have seen most of yours and vice versa. But there's some shows on your list that I haven't seen, and I think, you know, the other way around. I would like for each of us to choose one of each other's almost shows and commit to watching at least enough of it to come back episodes down the line and touch base on one of these shows. Because, you know, I've seen many of yours, and I think you've seen many of mine, but there's a couple here that I think, just based on this conversation, I'd be really interested to check out.
I'm down. I already know which one of yours I want to do.
And I know which one of yours. So I'll go right off the, it's Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yeah, I think you should.
Just everything you just said, the way you described it. For me, and this was a blind spot for a long time, I think because, well, one, I live in New York and it took me probably almost a decade to go to a Broadway show. Cost prohibitive, one, but also musical theater was never quite my thing. It only recently have I realized ways to appreciate it that I hadn't before. So I feel like I'm ready for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, where when it came out, I might not have been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I'm gonna watch all four seasons, and I'll report back when I do. Maybe we do like a finale where we kind of check in, because I imagine this is gonna happen also with guests. We're gonna say these are shows I want to check out. Maybe we'll do like a finale check in. These are the things that we were inspired by this first season of TV BFFs. But starting with our almost shows, I'm going to watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and I'm really, really excited about it.
Okay. Well, I'm really excited because I'm going to watch Ted Lasso.
Really? Okay, good. Yeah. Yes.
That's the one that I want to watch. I was thinking Peaky Blinders, but then I was like, I feel like Ted Lasso is going to be right up my alley. And I also think that my husband will like to watch that too. And I love to do like mutual watches.
Nice.
So yeah, I'm excited about that one.
Can I ask you, because there's a bit of an imbalance here.
Oh yeah.
I'm committing to four seasons of my Crazy Ex. Why don't you do Ted Lasso in season one?
Season one of Peaky.
Well, because here's the thing about Peaky, the seasons are only six episodes each. They're quick watches.
Oh,
which is really nice.
Okay.
Crazy Ex Girlfriend, that's a network show. That's a lot of episodes.
Because Ted Lasso is what, like eight episodes or less?
I think it tops 12, but they're half hours.
They're half hours. Oh, yeah. Okay.
They're all half hours. Okay. So this is fun. This is really fun. And I'm really glad you picked Peaky and Ted, because there's new stuff for both of them coming on the horizon. They're both good ones to get into now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard too much about Crazy Ex to not check it out.
I think that you're going to enjoy it. And I'm very jealous that you just get to kind of watch it all in one run, because I'm really interested to see kind of what you take away from that. Because like I watched it over the, excuse me, the 4 years that it was on.
Right.
Or 5 years or however long it was on for. And I know that this character development happened. And so I'm interested to see that, like, if you get to just go one after the other, yeah. like how that, like just how it feels, you know, since it wasn't made to be a streaming show.
Right. Yeah. But if I you feel know? Like it's going to have some streaming energy.
Yeah. Which I'm no, I think it's about. Definitely going to have streaming energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. All I'm right. done. I'm excited. I've got new stuff to watch. That's Hell great. Yeah.
All right. So that is all for right now. And if you're wondering what shows will make it into each of our own BFF criteria, then please stay tuned and follow the show, because that episode will be coming up later on this season. But in the meantime, you can follow us on Instagram at TVBFF Podcast, and please rate and review and subscribe to the show if you like what you're hearing so far. And if you want to hear more, you can actually check out another episode available right now featuring our BFF criteria conversation with the amazing Darren Karp. So please check that out.
That's right. And please follow the show, because we have a bunch more incredible TV BFF interviews coming up. And we've got a great slate of guests, including everyone from podcast personalities and comedians to other TV producers, writers, and storytellers. Guys, we're talking about so many great shows with this podcast. I can't even believe it. And once again, be on the lookout for our BFF criteria episode, which is coming soon. So until next time, bye, friends.
Bye, friends.